don't know what I was waiting for. And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me. But I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes. Turn and face the strain.
Hi, welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. It's good to have you here with us. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, RyanBallengee, or you can follow Golf News Net on Twitter at Golf News Net. Find us at Devil Ball Golf on Twitter, too. And you can find my work at GolfNewsNet.com as well as Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf blog. If you're a Facebook person or a Snapchat person, you can find us at Facebook.com/GolfNewsNet or Snapchat at Golf News Net. We don't really say a whole lot on Snapchat, but it'll disappear, so you'll forget that it ever happened. Our show is presented by BetDSI.com. We use BetDSI.com's odds every week for our odds to win for PGA Tour and sometimes European Tour events of the week. And we love that they offer for you the betting public, and you may or may not be betting, but you may also use it for your fantasy golf advice, as we do too, that you can find out where the public's money is at any one moment on particular odds, which are actually way more in-depth in terms of the price that you get than what you typically see at other places online and other sports books, especially to win. So really find that fascinating. That's why we use them, and that's why they are a presenting sponsor of our podcast for this year. So we're happy to have them aboard. Happy to have you aboard, too. This week is the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I've been saying for 20 years the AT&T Pebble Beach National Pro-Am, and it is now just the Pro-Am. There's no national anymore. Just like the other day, Rich Lerner was speaking on the air, and he called it the Byron Nelson Championship. It's not that anymore. It's the AT&T Byron Nelson. So there's always a little change to a name here and there. And AT&T, to their credit, has been pretty cool about modernizing the tournament names, getting rid of some of the superfluous words and just making it is what it is, and here's what the tournament's called. And I like that. I think that they've done a nice job as sponsor of this tournament, obviously, for, 30 years, and just getting into things with the Byron Nelson. But they've done a nice job there, too. And they've modernized the logos, and they've just done some very good things in recent years. And I don't know who's the head of sponsorship over there, but they've done a nice job. For as much as I love the views that we're going to get, obviously we got them starting Thursday, and we'll get through the weekend of this tournament, it is excruciating to watch the AT&T Pro-Am on television. And there are a couple problems with it. The most obvious is that there are three courses. And it costs a lot of money to broadcast golf tournaments. You have to have cameras at most every hole, or at least you have to have towers on like the last six holes. And then you have to have roving cameras. And those people have to have carts, and people have to operate them, and you have to have cables and sat trucks, and you have to be able to move the footage from one place to where it needs to go to the truck, that needs to go into the space, that needs to go to the studio. All of these crazy, crazy things that have to happen. And that costs a lot of money to do it for one course every week, much less three. So you get a series of handheld cameras that go follow maybe one or two groups on each of the other courses that's not Pebble Beach, which is the host course. It hosts the Sunday final round, so it makes sense to have all your infrastructure there. And you barely see any of the rounds of the other players. You're basically going to see if the player isn't on Pebble Beach that day, the only players you're really going to see are Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, the top players, which that's great. But if they're not in the lead, as they're not right now, like Bronson Burgoon was after day one, or Chez Reavy was, I'm sorry, Bronson Burgoon is in there, he's, seven under. But to have those guys at the top of the leaderboard, if they're not on Pebble Beach, you're not going to really hear about them. You're not going to hear from them. So I think that's kind of a downside to this tournament. That's the first and biggest, that you're not going to see the leader each day in the TV window, because even if they are teeing off of the TV window, they might be on a golf course that's not the main course. And since they're not the main feast for the eyes that have been identified heading into the tournament, we've got six of the top nine in the world here, so this makes some sense, especially this year. They're just not going to get on air, and you're going to, wait, they're up like three. What happened? And you'll never see it. And those highlights do not exist, and they won't exist forever. And that's a problem. And the other part of it is, and let's be realistic, It's the celebrities. It's the people who play in the pro-am. At a certain point, maybe 20, 25, 30, whatever number of years ago, the celebrities were the folks that drove tournaments. They especially drove tournaments on the PGA Tour. And I mean, there were 6, 7, 8, 9 pro-ams a year, and everyone kind of had a celebrity behind it, and they were in different parts of the country, and you brought the regional celebrities out, and that created a regional draw, so people would come to the tournament, and people would watch on TV because the celebrities were there, and you would watch them play golf and play like crap and go, ah, ha, ha, and then compare to the pros, and they weren't really celebrities at that same level. But the sports landscape in this country has changed, and Will Haskett did a great piece for us over at Golf News Net for this week, where he delves into this topic of does the celebrity pro-am really matter anymore? And he says that in the context of the fact that the sports world has changed. So many sports, pretty much every sport that you can imagine at the professional level is broadcast live or on tape somewhere in the world, either online or on cable or what have you, every week. And so these athletes get a lot more exposure. Social media certainly helps if you're playing in that space too. And you have your own following that people want to see you wherever you are. You're the celebrity. You're the draw. Screw the celebrities. They can't play golf. People want to see Jordan Spieth play. They want to see Jason Day play. They want to see the top draws play. That's what you're there for, by and large. With the notable exception yesterday of Justin Timberlake, as Justin Rose put it, it's a demographic he'd never seen on the golf course before. I understand that. Fine. Timberlake's awesome. But, by and large, of the amateurs in the field, and there are probably 40 to 45 legitimate celebrities, either from the world of sports or entertainment in the field. The other 100 and change are just rich people. They are just rich people. Business, some are great golfers too, but by and large, they're the 1% or the top one half of 1% in terms of wealth. So these are just folks who I think it costs $25,000 to $30,000 to get into the pro-am these days. That's like that's dental floss, basically. And they just cut the check and, all right, well, I'm in again, and they move on. But no one's there to see them. They're there because they want to be there and they want to play with a professional and they want to play Pebble Beach. But ultimately, CBS feels the need because I guess they haven't entirely realized that people who watch golf do not watch for celebrities. They feel the need to show celebrities at Pebble Beach on Saturday. And part of that is a reason because they want to continue to show golf. It's a noble reason. They want to show some golf. The problem is because of the expense in covering 3 different golf courses, the Saturday round is really the worst round you're going to watch on TV all year because they try to limit it to the holes where they have the towers and they don't have all the cameras everywhere. And so they put Costas and Faldo and Nance in a booth at 17 for most of the day and let the celebrities and players run through and do short interviews. And they try to keep people connected. I understand near the tail end of the round. And these guys pay a lot of money and they want to feel like they can be, big boys that get on TV and get their swing torn apart by Costas and all that. And it's good for them. They're having a great time doing that. We are not. If you're watching on TV, it is absolutely miserable. It's like, can you please show some golf? Well, here is J.P. McManus's swing. He's a really rich Irish guy, and oh, that's some good action there, and a great extension, and then he hits like fat. And like, oh, but too bad he looked up and made terrible contact. And then the guy laughs, and Costas like, well, if you just do this, you'd hit it better. And we move on. Meanwhile, there is actual professional golf happening, really good golf happening, and we see hardly any of it. So a word of advice, do not watch the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. You are just doing yourself a disservice. And it's just the nature of trying to cover a golf tournament. It's really hard to do on 3 courses. It's hard to do properly. And apparently at the highest levels of executive management at the sports companies, at CBS in particular and Golf Channel, they still feel that celebrities are a draw. But I will give Golf Channel some credit. Yesterday, I feel like they tried to mitigate the amount of celebrity golf coverage we saw, knowing full well that we all hate it, that it just doesn't, it's not a draw. No one wants to see Chris Berman play golf. I've seen Chris Berman play golf in person. I didn't want to see it then. I don't want to see it on TV when I'm trying to watch someone who's really good play golf. And I think you all would agree with that sentiment. what I would like to see, and I don't know how you do this, but maybe, and maybe this is something for PGA Tour Live, which is, by the way, an excellent product. I know I'm typically not the biggest, not that I'm not a fan of the PGA Tour. I think they're doing a lot of really cool things. PGA Tour Live is one of those cool things. Their coverage of golf from the PGA Tour's perspective, and they only do a limited number of holes in groups on the weekdays, and it's early in the morning, so it's well before the TV window. But their coverage is excellent. It is the way golf is supposed to be broadcast in the 21st century. It utilizes data, the graphics are clean, the folks doing the play-by-play and commentary, and they're not at the tournament site by and large. There are some guys that are, but some guys aren't. They do a great job. They just do a wonderful job with it. It is a very good product. And I think ultimately it is the setup to expand PGA Tour Live into a broader set of the coverage. I think I truly feel that, and I can't tell you what the PGA Tour's business motives are, but I ultimately think what they're going to try and do, and they probably have an out in their long-term contract with Golf Channel and the broadcast networks, NBC and CBS, where they could have an option to say, well, we know the contract rolls through 2021, but we want to bail out now, and we're going to offer a digital product that we can sell to golf fans for blah, blah dollars, and we're going to try and get a little bit more of that direct pay share instead of going through you, the cable and television networks, which, by the way, fewer people are watching TV on TV than ever. Fewer people have cable TV than you know, that's going down. So we're getting to the point where we're kind of straddling the line of where having a digital service, a digital offering, is going to be something that leagues and networks are they going to fight over. And leagues are going to want to get that money directly. They're going to want to cut out the network, do it themselves. They can do it cheaper. They don't have to subsidize other programming. They can just do it their own way and move on with it. That's where this is going. So I'm very happy that the PGA Tour has put out a good product. And they're going to continue to improve it. They're going to continue to expand it. And hopefully that means either next year or 2 years or 3 years, we have an option as golf fans to essentially turn off the celebrity portion of the AT&T Pro-Am. And you just have all professionals all the time, all day, all three courses, and that's what you get for whatever your number of dollars per month, $7, $8, $9, $10 a month to watch golf. And I think if that could be done, I think that would be an extremely good way to go about this because, as I've mentioned, the first 3 days of this tournament are just unwatchable. And I know that the setting is incredible. The Monterey Peninsula is one of my favorite places in the world. It is constantly stunning. Everywhere you look, it's beautiful. It might not necessarily be all that warm, but it's beautiful. And you're pretty much guaranteed that every day of your life. And that setting is hard to not want to showcase. But again, you see dogs running on beaches, deer coming out of trees, celebrities hitting bad golf shots. More and more stuff that, while maybe interesting to some percentage of the audience, takes away from the actual broadcast of professional golf. So the balance hasn't been struck properly, in my opinion. It never has been. But I think that the PGA Tour's live product could, if the tour decides to do so, apply a little bit more pressure to the networks to deliver a broadcast more golf fans want. And if they're not interested in doing that, that they could do it themselves and really gain from it in a way that we'd also gain. So we would both come out winners. They get some bucks, I'll throw some money at them, and you would too, and we get golf that we want to see at the most beautiful destinations in the world. And that's a win. That's what we want, ultimately. That's what we want to improve the golf coverage. So that's the little miniature rant about the broadcast coverage this week. Again, just watch on Sunday. You'll get plenty of golf. It's all Pebble Beach. You'll enjoy it, and we'll get a winner. And otherwise, it's a very difficult to follow tournament. It's really good to watch in person because you just have golf everywhere. You can leave courses. You can go to another one. You can kind of spend 3 days with a group. Whatever you want to do. A lot of cool options to be able to watch it in person. It's a great in-person event. Terrible on TV. Need to change that. There's a bunch of other kind of small things to talk about, so I don't have like a 25-minute monologue on just why watching golf this week is just the absolute worst. But I've noticed something in the last couple of weeks watching Jason Day and Jordan Spieth come out of the gate, and Rory McIlroy to some extent, that these guys are a little bit rusty. And Spieth obviously won by 8 at Kapalua looked awesome doing it, played a very measured tournament, showcased some extra distance, and then finished in one of the top 10 in all the events he's played so far this year. But he looked a little rusty yesterday. He looked like a guy who was a little out of sync, even though he said ahead of the tournament that he felt refreshed after going to so many different countries from November until a couple weeks ago. I mean, he had gone from China to Australia to the Bahamas, back into the United States to play in Hawaii, then to Abu Dhabi, and then Singapore. I mean, he's basically been in six different countries for his last six events, and he's played extremely well in all those tournaments. But he looked a little bit tired, a little bit rusty, and he was annoyed by that. I understand. And then you've got Jason Day, who was sick for Torrey Pines, so you kind of have to take that piece out of it. But he hasn't played a whole lot this year. He played at Kapalua because he wanted to be a part of that tournament. But he's trying to balance out being a dad for now two times and trying to be the number one, number two, number three player in the world, depending on where he's at and how he's playing. In seeing those guys, and throwing Rory McIlroy too, because he's been close in his two starts this year in the United Arab Emirates, but not the winner in either of them. And I think we're in for a really fascinating year where these guys try to redefine what it means to be world number one. Because for 20 years, we had Tiger Woods at world number one, more or less. I mean, Vijay Singh was in there, obviously, and some other folks were in there over the course of 20 years. David Duval, too. But over that 20-year period, we knew what world number one meant. And that meant dominance. That meant winning. It meant winning a lot. It meant winning big. It meant winning on the same venues over and over and over again. By the way, you should look at Tiger Woods' record and the number of wins that he has at the same tournament. It is astounding, for better or for worse. It kind of pumps up his record, but at the same time, it also makes you kind of really appreciate his ability to just kick the same course's ass time and time again. Anyway, so this year, we're going to try and figure out, who is the best player in the world? Is it the guy that's the best putter, who's gained some extra yards in Spieth? Is it the guy who has probably the most overall level talent in every category, Jason Day? Or is it the guy who has the extreme power and accuracy off the tee and is a streaky putter, and Rory McIlroy? Who is that number one player? Or, of course, you could have someone else come from behind, have a huge year, and become world number one. Ricky Fowler could do it. You could have other players come in. I mean, they would have to have six win seasons to do it. But nonetheless, it's possible. Guys outside the top four. But these guys have to figure out what it's like to be number one. And Spieth got there, obviously, at 22. And he's done it pretty well. And I think he made the critical error after he won the two majors. He let Jay Danzy, who was his agent and was his caddy in Singapore, and just said, okay, well, you know, we got to make some money. So we're going to go take seven-figure paydays to go play the following tournaments, Australian Open, Abu Dhabi, Singapore. We're going to take that money. And that's, what, $3-4 million in the bank, no matter what you do. And I guess Spieth went along with it, and then he realized halfway through it, that was a bad idea, but he made these commitments, so he's going to do that. But he's not going to do it again. So will that set him up for a tired rest of the year? What point can he take a break and recover? Because he plays a lot of golf, and he's setting himself up for a run through the Masters where he's playing a lot of golf. Man, basically, we have, 9 weeks to the Masters, something like that? And in that stretch, 7-8 weeks, in that stretch, we're going to have Spieth playing a lot of golf because he's going to play the Florida Swing. He's going to play Tampa where he defends, the match play. He's probably going to play the API. I mean, he's got he's going to play Northern Trust next week. So he's got a lot of golf going on between now and the Masters. Houston, because he almost won there last year, and it's a Texas event. You can't not play a Texas event and be a Texan. That doesn't look very good. And then you've got Jason Day on the opposite extreme, who kind of pulled an Adam Scott because he became a new dad in the offseason and just didn't play a whole lot of golf. So he's got to ramp up toward playing better. And he seems to be a guy who tends to play better later in the year anyhow. So maybe that's a good thing for him. And he seems to perk up for the Masters. He has an affinity for the golf course. Then you've got Rory McIlroy, who tends to do well really early in the year. And then he kind of goes through a lull in the middle of it and then gets better at the end. That seems to have been his trajectory. Primarily because he goes over to the United Arab Emirates, where if they played every golf tournament there, he would be the greatest golfer of all time. and he does well there, and then finally decides to come to the United States. This year he's going to make an alteration. He's going to play Riviera next week, which I think is great. That's awesome. And that's something that these guys are doing that Tiger never did, which was to deviate from the schedule at their peak. And these guys have decided, all right, well, I'm going to go play the best golf courses on the PGA Tour. I want to scope them out. And if I don't like it, I won't go back, but I want to give them a try. And part of that is also this new rule that's coming about where these guys who are the top players, and every player in the PGA Tour has to add a new event to their schedule pretty much every year. Just one, but it's a new one, and it's good for the tournaments. So they're kind of getting into that groove, that mindset now. All right, what am I going to add that I haven't done before? Will I come back? Will I alter my schedule and make that a permanent part, cut something else out? How does that all work out? They're still figuring that out. So they're figuring out how their lives work as top-ranked players. Obviously, McIlroy's is changing. He's going to get married to Erica Stoll. You've got Jason Day, who's now a dad twice over. You've got Jordan Spieth, who is now this world-famous astrokind, who is still trying to get over the fact that hundreds of people follow him around just for autographs and pictures pretty much wherever he goes, and that he is that highly recognizable and that he is the next American golf superstar. He's got to deal with that. And I can even see that on the back end of our site when we've put up posts about who's the top player schedules for this year. When's Tiger going to play? Maybe never. When's Jordan Spieth going to play? When's Rory McIlroy going to play? When's Ricky Fowler going to play? I got to do one on Jason Day for that matter. That's a personal reminder. But of all of those, Tiger is kind of highest because people are wondering when the world's going to happen to his career. Next best is Jordan Spieth by a mile. People are somewhat mildly interested in what Rory McIlroy is going to do, but he plays so much European Tour golf that he's often off the radar until the spring and summer. And then you've got Jason Day, who I think more and more people are interested in, but he hasn't played a whole lot of golf either. Ricky Fowler draws some interest, but that's still coming up because he's got to win a little bit more. He's got to win that major to get on that level. So Jordan Spieth draws a whole lot of attention. That's something to get used to. And I know that I probably had this argument with some of you either on email or Twitter that stats tell you everything that you need to know. No, they don't. They really don't. Stats are an indicator of several things, but they don't tell you what you need to know. They tell you what happens. They don't tell you why it happens. And the why is the most important part of golf. Either mechanics, mental, off the course, on the course, that's the most important part. And we're going to see these guys as they try to figure out and work their way through the lives of being a golf superstar. As just talked about earlier, they are the celebrities now. They are the people that get that hounded. They have the millions of Twitter followers. They have the people that are interested in their every move on and off the golf course. So, again, that's why golf websites cover it. They've got to acclimate to that, and I think McIlroy is probably best acclimated to that at this point because he's got four majors to his name. But Jason Day is getting used to that. He's a pretty darn private person. And then you've got Jordan Spieth, who seems to have been trained for this from his teenage years, but even still, it takes time to get used to it. And I think anybody who's ever been in that position would tell you that. And so that's the intrigue for this year, I think. We all basically have assumed, because they were so incredible last year together, that they would all just, this is the way it's going to be now. Well, that's not quite how it works. And you've seen players have great seasons before and rise up and win 3, 4, 5 times, and then that's it. It doesn't happen again, either because it makes them uncomfortable, or they try to change, or they try to collect money, or they try to do something in the interests of short-term gain that is nearsighted and forces them to forget what the long-term game is. So for these guys, it's really crucial this year to figure out a way to live their lives moving forward for the long term, not worry about short-term financial gain, either in terms of performance or appearance fees or other deals that they can make money off of, short-term money. If you want to be a true great in modern golf, you've got to think long-term. And I think that these guys are equipped to do that, but we'll see which of them does it best. That, to me, is the underlying intriguing story of 2016. And so when you see guys come out with ring rust, and you had Spieth come out with that ring rust yesterday, hit some really poor wedge shots, hit a lot of shots in the galleries, one-arm finishes. He still shot 1-under-71, which is a credit to his ability to grind and still score when he doesn't have his best. But that to me, is an indication that he isn't 100% ready to go and that he isn't entirely over having traveled to 6 countries in a span of 2.5 months. That's going to take a little while. So is he going to work that out on the road? Is he going to find a way to rest? He's going to pull out of a tournament for some reason. That doesn't seem like the kind of guy Spieth is. What's Day going to do? Is Day going to decide to play, ramp up more golf toward the Masters? Is he going to just kind of ease into it and let being a father for the second time kind of be the main thing in his life, even though at 27 he's a major champion and borderline the best golfer in the world, and this is really now your peak in golf is your late 20s, apparently, maybe to your early 30s, Zach Johnson notwithstanding. And is that his thing? And then obviously Rory McIlroy played very distracted golf when he was with Caroline Wozniacki and they were talking about marriage. I mean, that was very distracting for him. His performance suffered. And now he's in a similar position, and I don't expect him to run away from the altar, but that you got to be involved in that. You can't just be like, yeah, whatever. That's not the way it's going to work. And I don't think that's the kind of person Rory McIlroy is. He's not that kind of guy. So if that's the case, then he's got stuff on his mind that's not golf. And maybe that leaves room for someone who's a little bit clearer-headed, i.e. Patrick Reed, maybe Ricky Fowler, who seems to have figured out early on how to deal with the corporate side of things. He's got that pretty well in tow. I mean, he hasn't really changed a whole lot. And now he's trying to figure out the winning part of it. And I think maybe that ultimately, long-term, is the right way to do it, if you have the talent to pull it off. And I say this as kind of a catharsis moment of, take Fowler for example. So when he came out on the PGA Tour, obviously had the longer hair, had the Red Bull deal, he had the Cobra Puma deal, he had the orange, he had the fashion statements, he had that media training, he had this website URL on his hat, he's a marketing whiz, he knows how to do those things. He knew that coming out of Oklahoma State. And he just didn't necessarily deliver those results right away. Quirky swing, hard to be consistent, hard to handle that under pressure. Made the changes with Harmon, got his top fives in the majors, and now has figured out how to win and win close ones. And yeah, you let Phoenix get away, but you're not going to have a perfect record in one-stroke situations. It's just not going to happen. Tiger Woods doesn't, you don't, no one will. It doesn't happen. But now that he's got the corporate part figured out, and he knows kids follow him, and he's got girls all after him and all that good stuff, he's got that handled. He's used to it now. Now he can focus on the winning part of it. It's gone the opposite way for these other guys. Spieth knows how to do the corporate speak stuff. He's been trained by his dad to do it. But being number one is on a different level. Now he's getting used to that. Rory McIlroy took some time to get used to that. And he's seemingly figured out how to do it and balance out life. But now it's in a world of higher expectations. And he's going to be a husband and then probably a dad someday, I assume. And you got Jason Day, who is a really quiet guy who wants to kind of hoard his money, and because he came from humble beginnings, and now that he's got it, what is he going to do with it? Is it going to change him? Of those four players, if you were going to look at the guy who is handling what's inside the ropes best with the least number of distractions, to me, that's Ricky Fowler. So does that open up a window for him to have an incredible year? I don't know, but I'd love to go through the psychology of players way more than what they're doing with their swings, way more than what you see inside the ropes, because ultimately, that's the thing that is when we do fantasy golf predictions and we try to figure out who's going to win and we talk about who the best golfers are, we often leave all of that out of the conversation, and we're guilty of that, and everybody that talks about golf is guilty of that. We ignore those things, and why? Because we want to assume these guys are robots that can do anything that they want to do if they just put their mind to it. That's not the case. It's not how it works. And so if that's not the case and that's not how it works, why aren't we talking about the stuff that has a huge influence, that matters? And maybe you don't think of it when you've got 105 yards into the 18th hole, and if you get up and down, you win. But it might have prevented you from hitting one good shot, or thinking as long about the shot that you needed before that, or making that six-footer because as you took the club back, you're like, oh, I got to deal with that. Those distractions, they exist, they're real, and they have a real impact on the game. And I don't think that they get enough, for lack of a better term, credit for what they mean. And it's because they're immeasurable. They're immeasurable. And most of these guys won't open up about them. But if you're a smart golf fan, if you're a smart watcher of golf, you know those things are real. And you don't necessarily know the moments they come into play, but you know they're real and you know they have a real impact. So something to watch out for through the rest of this year as we kind of ramp up in golf season and we start to see more and more tournaments where the Big Three and Big Four get together on a regular basis before the Masters. That's going to do it for us this week on the show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Please, if you subscribe through iTunes, give us a 5-star review and some comments. We're happy to answer your questions, too, if you leave those in a review with 5 stars, only 5 stars. On iTunes. And also, if you're an Android user, you may not know this, but Google Play Music is starting to roll out the ability to subscribe to podcasts through that service. So if you use Google Play Music, you can start to check out the 19th Hole Golf Show there. We're already lined up with it. It's already set up. We just have to wait for the word to go that there's kind of the general populace can use it. But check it out. See if you check into Google Play Music, see if you can subscribe that way, and you can check out our show that way. Also, give a look to GNM Plus. We are expanding member benefits all the time for $3 a month or $30 per year. You get access to all of our fantasy golf research every week, all of our tools, including fantasy golf finish trends, historic leaderboards, which is new, DraftKings daily fantasy value trends, and also more and more tools that are coming online that as we think of them in terms of value to our research, we're going to add them to you so you can have total transparency if what we're telling you we think is interesting each week about fantasy golf. On top of that, we're expanding member value, so we're going to give you discounts to Golfsmith, other services, including Shipsticks are coming, clubs to hire. We're going to have some other discounts coming. And then also, if you are an annual member, so you pay the $30 fee, you will get a USGA handicap index service through US Handicap for free. You can maintain it for a whole year, maintain your scores online or on an app, and you can go and have some fun with golf and not have to worry about going to a terminal every time you play golf. So a lot more member benefits coming. We also have a contest running through the end of the month that if you're a GNM member, you're automatically entered. So some people don't even know they're in the contest yet, probably. But you'll have an opportunity to win a Ruckit Rucknet as well as Golf Zone Swing Talk Swing Analyzer, which those are two great tools to help you winterize your game or any time of the year for that matter. So we're really excited about that. So GNN Plus on golfnewsnet.com. Check it out. It's easy. Check out through PayPal, and we give you the opportunity to cancel anytime regardless of your membership level, and we'll issue a prorated refund for the difference. Anyway, that's it for us this week. Next week, we get Riviera and Hogan's Alley with a very good field again for the Northern Trust Open, the final Northern Trust Open, because it's going to become Hyundai. Hyundai's going to slap their name on the tournament. So we're very excited about that. And as we get into the meat of golf season, you can contact me anytime, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com or on Twitter @RyanBallenge. Till next week, I'm Ryan Ballenge saying thanks so much for listening to our show. We'll see you next week.